Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back Lana Del Rey. Great to see you.
Nice to see you.
It's great to hear you, man. Is it too bold for me to say, Lana, that this record has come back pretty fast? I mean, it's been a year, really, since the last one, and we get used to artists who tour never-ending right around the world to take some time, but that hasn't happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think I put out the first record the first month of 2012, and then I had the Paradise Edition, which had 9 additional songs a year later. And then I had a little more time in between that and Ultraviolence, but I've kind of been doing stuff every 14, 15 months. So it felt like enough time.
Is there ever a moment when you're like, you know, I've got something in me now, I've got to get out?
No, but I always want to take advantage if I feel inspired, because, you know, you don't feel that way all the time.
So what was the starting point of this new album? Like, where did
it... this one?
Yeah, the one that's forthcoming.
I think the jumping off point was kind of the end of the other one. So just feeling like I wasn't too tired and feeling still inspired, like I could keep going, I just wanted to take advantage of it and see where it led. I didn't think it would turn into an entirely new record, but then as the months went on, I think in about January, I really felt like I had 8 months to write probably 3/4 of the record. I thought it was really good and it could turn into a real record. Because, you know, mixing and mastering takes so long. It can take me 3 months. So, I mean, the record came out in June last year, I think, but I'd been mixing for probably 8 weeks. Like, when you're mixing, it's so technical, so sometimes it's actually a break to go back into the studio and not have to worry about the technicalities and have fun writing.
I don't know how you do it in terms of getting the mixes right on records like yours, because every song, every style, every feel of every piece of music has to encapsulate so much vibe.
Yeah.
And that's not easy. Like, you can sit down and write the words and get it all out of your system, have it in your head, but then to achieve the vibe of a song like Honeymoon is not easy.
Oh, like Honeymoon? Yeah, I mean, it's really specific, you know? It's a lot of different kind of retro reverbs and slap reverbs, distortion, and mixing it all together. So it kind of has this weight and thickness.
For songs that float and bring you in, they're quite aggressive if you actually, like, you know, listen to them in their own way. I think so. You know, when you listen to them, they have that hardness to them.
Yeah, I think they're specific. That definitely makes them kind of aggressive.
So a brand new album from Lana Del Rey we're very excited about. It's called Honeymoon. And we have a song to play called High by the Beach, Thank You, which is instantly one of the catchiest songs I've heard in recent memory. It's part of who you are musically and what you've created, but it's almost like a hip-hop record.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk about the origin of High by the Beach, where this song came from, yeah.
Well, it started with the chorus. I mean, I was driving by the beach a lot, and this was probably one of the last ones on the record. And I liked that the chorus melodies, all the harmonies kind of had an Andrews Sisters vibe.
Right.
It was like a 6-part harmony. Even with the harmonies, it almost sounded monotone. So it had this weird drone to it. But then with the beat, it kind of had this, like, a trap influence. So
yeah, like Andrew's Sisters meeting Ludacris.
Yes. So I liked it.
Zane Lowe's World Record.
Loving you.
world record from Lana Del Rey, High by the Beach. We have Lana Del Rey right here at Beats One. It's great to see you and back with new music. This is exciting for fans all over the world. And it was a lovely surprise with Honeymoon, the way that came. And what's the anticipation like before you release a record like that to the world? Because you can do it any way you want now. You don't have to lead up if you don't want to. You can just decide to go on your account and fire it straight away.
That's pretty much what I do. I don't usually have too much anticipation or build up, but I never really wonder what's going to happen because I have my own account on YouTube, or we put videos up on Vevo with a kind of traditional approach. So, I mean, I like to put up the stills for the video first and then the video follows.
Do you follow what people are saying, or do you sort of switch off at that point?
Yeah, I follow it for the week. And then that's kind of it.
Do you recommend that to other artists growing up?
If you don't read the comments. Yeah.
That's right. The thing is, right, when I think about the way that people react to your music as fans, myself included, there's always so much fascination about the words, the lyrics, the melodies, the whole way that it feels is very intoxicating to listen to.
I'm glad you think so.
It absolutely is. And it's firmly established now as something that is very much part of your creative personality, your creative side. When you're making music, do you ever switch out of the process for a split second and think like, how is this going to be perceived? How are people going to listen to it? Or are you able to block all that out?
I'm pretty discerning, but not in terms of what other people are going to think. I have a discerning ear in terms of my own aesthetic and what I like to hear. So I'm just as much outside the box as I am right in the middle of the mix of it. You know, because I already know it's probably not going to be good. You know, it's going to be like one way or another. But I definitely, like, I have songs I've written that I don't like or that I don't really feel fit with the kind of genre of the record that I'm working within. So I think about that. Like, I usually write a lot of songs, but if they don't really fit with the tone of the record, they just get left out.
Where do these songs go?
They stay in Rick's studio, I guess.
Yeah. Do you like to go back and revisit these songs? Do you think there'll be a home? No, you don't. You just, wow.
I don't like it.
I suppose there's something unrequited and cool about that. You can put all this love and energy into a song and then let it go. That's kind of cool in a strange way.
Yeah, sometimes I think for years I felt like it was wasted time, but now it's easier to let them go.
Well, in some kind of like morbid approach, I'll try and word this in a way that isn't so dark and depressing, but at some point in the next 70, 80, 90, 100 years, we will all meet our maker and, exactly. And you know, I'll meet mine sooner than you, I'm sure. And then you have no choice. I mean, how would you feel if people discovered these songs after you were gone or if...
The other ones?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be happy.
Right.
Yeah, I don't like them.
So you have to shut them down.
I've got to find a way. Virtually... eradicate them. I don't know.
Could you do that? Could you destroy? You couldn't destroy them though. Could you go that far as to sit down with Rick in the studio and say delete the files?
I would, but I know Rick couldn't. He hates to part with anything. He is definitely more sentimental.
We both know that it's not fashionable to love me, but you don't come, 'cause truly there's nobody for you but me. We could cruise to the blue. Show Boulevard if we choose, or whatever you wanna do. We make the rules. Say you want me to. love now. The history of violence that surrounds you, but I'm not scared. There's nothing to lose now that I found you, and we could cross to the new Eco Boulevard in your youth, little bullet car, if we choose, Mr. Born to Lose.
Lana, what is it about from being an early age and feeling the need to express yourself and wanting to get music out? What is it for people who are listening now who don't understand the artistic streak the way you do, which is so intoxicating and brings you into this world for the highs and the lows, do you think?
I think it's different for every artist. I think there's a lot of different kinds of artists. I think for me, it was a way of sorting through questions I had, and then just a way of spending my time doing something I really loved doing. Obviously, when you're in the middle of it, it's a lot different than when you're on the periphery of it, thinking about it. But I guess for me, the draw of it, or the lure of it, like you said, is just the blessing of being able to tell your own life story and getting to be witnessed, if that's something that's important to you, which I think is probably important to everyone. And then you are, and then you get over it, and then you kind of go back to the basics and think about, well, do I still like doing this? Why am I doing this?
You do have those doubts.
Yeah, I had those doubts, and then I thought about not doing it, and I was, even as I was thinking about it, I was still doing it, and that's when I realized I'll probably just always be doing it in some capacity.
Finding that honesty within and really pushing yourself, I think, to be as truthful about your life and what you're going through as possible is the ultimate kind of sacrifice and gift. Sacrifice from you, gift to the audience.
Yeah, definitely. It's a sacrifice in the way that you're going to alienate a lot of people who could have been friends in passing on a surface level. And it's a blessing because, you know, there's what else is there really to do except be true to yourself and see where it leads you.
Do you ever, or have you ever been tempted to keep details down in some respect, or to hold back things that you think you have?
Yeah, well, as soon as the first record was out, I had a pretty good idea of what I was in for. But it didn't really change my writing process, because I kind of only have one approach. I don't conceptualize things in the way that's like, you know, what would sound like this artist so that it could sell, you know, like that. So I knew it was going to be interesting. Yeah.
And do your family understand? Do your friends understand?
Yeah, totally.
They get it?
I don't think they did, but now it's a different way of operating, because you know you're going to have a lot of criticism, and I think a lot of people might say, well, why bring it on yourself?
Like you said, there's no choice, right?
Well, there's definitely a choice, but I already made it. It's done. So there's no coming back. I mean,
you, though, seem to carry yourself in a way whereby you have found a balance between the attention that comes from being an artist of your kind, being one of a kind, and you seem to shrug it off. And I was saying this to the guys before, which is really cool. Whenever there's a photo of you, and they're quite rare, I think, photos of you, you know, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Do you know, for someone who's out there and how obvious things can be now, you keep a pretty low pro, I have to say.
I go to great lengths to have a lot of time to myself, because I think when you really make that decision, like, okay, you know, I'm going to make records every 15 months, because I tour a lot too. I've toured every year for 5 years. I mean, you know, like 6 months, 8 months on the road. So that other time, you know, I definitely want to be able to kind of lay low.
Yeah. Well, whenever there is a photo of you and your family, or perhaps some, you know, rumored love interest, you seem to be smiling and just completely like, I don't care. But it's really cool. You know, you see a lot of people like, get out of my face, and because they have to deal with it in a certain way. You seem oblivious to it in some respects, or at least.
Yeah, I bribe them with money to put out the smiling shots and not the ones where I'm flicking everybody off. That's still possible.
It is?
Yeah.
You can still pay them
off?
You
can still do that. It depends on the day.
I don't have that problem. or deep enough pockets to be able to deal with that situation.
Oh, but it's not that expensive. I think you could afford it.
Kiss me hard before you go. Summertime sadness. I just wanted you to know that baby, you're the best. I got my red dress on tonight, dancing in the dark in the pale moonlight. Throw my hair up real big, beauty queen style. Heels off, I'm feeling alive. Oh my God, I feel it in the air. Telephone wires above are sizzling like a snare. Honey, I'm on fire, I feel it everywhere. Nothing scares me anymore. Kiss me hard before you go. I'm feeling electric tonight. Cruising down the coast, going about 99. Got my bad baby by my heavenly side. I know if I go, I'll die happy tonight. I just wanted you.
So the other thing that people are talking about at the minute, just before we let you go, is this book, which is fascinating because James Franco, to me, has to be on record one of the weirdest, funniest guys ever. And I've never met him before in my life, but something just says to me that that guy is hilarious.
Well, I was surprised to see there was a book. I guess I would say, you know, last year we went out to Coney Island because I used to spend some time there. And we spent an hour together just talking, kind of like an informal interview. And, you know, we became friends, too. And then I knew he wanted to write a book, but we talked about the take he was going to take on it. I had kind of said, you know, I'm not sure. So he said, well, what if I write a fictional book, like a fictional book of conversations between us that sheds some light on both of our characters?
Conversations that neither of you had ever had together, made up by James Franco. And you said?
And I said, well, I said, why don't we wait on it? Because, you know, I mean, it's rare to find people that you click with instantly. Yeah. And when I met him, you know, we were kind of birds of a feather because we had similar interests. We had some of the same goals and some of the same favorite artists in common. And, you know, I loved all the movies he was in. So, you know, I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but I think the book they're talking about now, I mean, I haven't seen it. And I don't think that it's going to come out.
Right. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think conceptually it's...
Well, conceptually, it's a cool idea. I think you probably both want to definitely be in on it and have time.
Well, this is my thing. And I wasn't sure whether or not exactly how much you could just sort of like go write some fictional conversations between the two of us and see how that comes out.
Well, I mean, under other circumstances, I would. Like a few years ago, but because it's kind of tough out there.
It's hard out there.
It's hard out there.
It's hard out there for a book.
So, you know, I think maybe it's something like that would be good to revisit. There's something that I thought would be a cool idea is kind of a collection of poetry or pictures from both of us.
I mean, you must get a lot of this though. You must get a lot of people coming to you and asking you for permission to write books or be involved.
Well, he's different because he's someone that artistically I look up to. I would say that scenario is rare, but there's definitely other situations that come up.
And what about interests as well outside of music? Would you like to go into other arts, other areas, explore other things? Because you have been making an album and touring, and I know that is the primary passion, but obviously to re-inject some kind of energy into that, some enthusiasm, other people try other things.
I do have other interests. They're not really artistically related. I mean, it's more tech stuff. That for the last 10 years, you know, I got that from my dad.
You in the IP business?
Not exactly. For instance, what Elon Musk is doing with SpaceX, things like that. Just seeing where we're going, because technologically we're advancing so quickly. I don't want to miss any of it. I feel like we're on the cusp, just the way they were in the 60s in a different way.
Have you had a chance to talk to Elon about it?
Yeah.
Wow, what was that like?
Amazing. It was one of the best days of my life.
Amazing, man. And I suppose the last question in relation to the fact that you've met the man with many answers, how are we doing?
Well, I think it's more like, what are we going to do if we're not doing well? And I think that's the answer he's trying to provide. In the meantime, I think if you're lucky enough to be able to pursue what you love to do, then that's what I try and do while I'm here. But my head is sometimes in the clouds. Or further than that.